Hey there, you've turned into Sorting Pin, the California Cattlemen podcast. Every day at the California Cattlemen's Association, we're sorting through the issues impacting you, California's ranching families and producers. I'm your host and CCA's Director of Communications, Katie Roberti, and this podcast is to discuss those issues, talk about solutions, and keep ranchers and the ranching community current on what's happening in Sacramento and beyond. Tune in every other Monday for a brand new episode, and I hope you enjoy this brand new episode that's about to begin right now. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Sorting Pin. It's hard to believe we're already into the final stretch of summer, and it's going to be September before we know it. Actually, probably September right now. If you're listening to this podcast, it's coming out on September 4th. So happy September. If you missed our last episode, we were talking about county climate action plans and why ranchers should be aware of them. If you have no idea what that is, like I mentioned on that podcast episode, go check it out and learn. It's an interesting conversation about those plans happening in counties and why you should be a part of them if you're a rancher. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about animal activism in California and beyond. I wanted to provide this update because there's a few things happening specifically in California right now with animal activism activity. So we're going to have that conversation with the Animal Ag Alliance's president and CEO, Hannah Thompson-Weeman. She's joining us from across the country today. So Hannah, thanks for joining us. I'm excited and look forward to our conversation.
I'm glad to do it. An unfortunate reality that you in California deal with a lot of the most extreme activists that we monitor. So puts us in touch frequently, which is nice, but I wish it was under better circumstances sometimes.
Agreed. I always do appreciate working with your team, even on not such a fun subject. Before we get going, I just have one question for you. It's pretty random, but it's just been on my mind. It's like I said, the beginning of September. Do you think it's too early for pumpkin spice lattes out yet? Yay or nay? What's the vibe on the East Coast?
I've already had like four. So no, East Coast is all in. I'm more of a Starbucks person than a Dunkin' person, which is an ongoing debate amongst our staff. But Dunkin' got their pumpkin like a week earlier out here. So I've had a couple of Dunkins, and then I think I've already had Starbucks twice. So absolutely not. Bring it on. I haven't started burning the fall candles yet or got like the random pumpkins out that sit around my house. I'm holding out till September 1st for that. But no, pumpkin is always in season.
Okay, great. I'm glad we got that sorted out. You heard it first. Pumpkins in. If you've been a regular listener on this podcast, we don't normally talk about pumpkin spice lattes, but since it is kind of fall and I think it's a fun topic, I decided to ask it. Also, if you are a regular listener, the last 2 years, you may remember Hannah joined me for a conversation on the Animal Ag Alliance's mission to connect, engage, and protect while we were both at the Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA trade show in Houston. And that was all the way back in last February. If you listen to it for a while, Hannah will be a familiar voice. Today, though, I wanted to particularly focus on the work the Alliance does on animal rights activism, as I said. So if you want to learn more, go check out season 2, episode 4 of that podcast. But to get us started, Hannah, maybe just a quick reminder of what the Ag Alliance is and specifically the work you do to monitor and protect animal ag against extreme animal activists in the state would be a good place to start.
The Animal Agriculture Alliance is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to safeguard the future of animal agriculture and its value to society by bridging the communication gap between farm and food communities. So I want you to think for a second about a time that maybe you've seen something on social media or in the media, in the news, or maybe even said by a friend or family member about beef or any other part of agriculture that was just blatantly wrong. I'm sure you have at least one example popping up in your head, and that's why the Animal Ag Alliance is here. There's a lot of misinformation. There are a lot of myths out there about animal agriculture, and we're here to set the record straight and correct the narrative when it comes to important topics like animal welfare, sustainability, responsible antibiotic use, and again, the value that animal agriculture brings to society as far as providing safe, affordable, and delicious protein to a hungry planet. Our work involves both proactive communication, so reaching out to key audiences to talk about those subjects and share information about animal agriculture, but also monitoring the sources of myths and misinformation, which include animal rights extremists. So there is a small but very loud percentage of the population out there that just doesn't believe there's any way to ethically and responsibly raise animals for food. And they're working very fervently to try to further that mindset and achieve their agenda of ending animal agriculture and taking meat, poultry, dairy, eggs, and seafood off of our plates. So we monitor the activism movement so we can understand their strategies and tactics. We have profiles on 200 different organizations that are working in this space, and we provide security resources and an intel to our members in the broader animal agriculture community about what animal rights activists are doing now, what they might be doing next, and how we can safeguard our livelihood.
Thanks, Hannah. Yes, you guys do so much more than just monitor animal rights activists, so I'm glad we started there. California Cattlemen's is a member of the Ag Alliance, so we do get to benefit and, as Hannah said, work together closely. When there are these incidences or events happening in California, the Ag Alliance saves us an extreme amount of time and gets us ahead on pretty much any incident there's been. So I'm grateful to have them as team members to work with. We know the state does have its fair share of extreme animal rights activity. However, you're also watching this on a global scale, and you guys do a good job updating us of trends happening across the world. Before we specifically talk about California, are there any trends or topics that the Alliance is seeing right now from that community that you want us to start off talking about or just share before we jump into California specifically?
This is actually a really good timing because we are just in the middle of working on and releasing reports from major animal rights conferences so we can kind of keep an eye on those and understand, again, what they're talking about and what the major trends are. So a few of those big trends that I wanted to mention, a lot of them aren't new. They're kind of continuations of conversations we've known that have happened at these conferences before. But one of those that always sticks out to me is the attempt by these activist organizations to capitalize on growing public interest and conversation around sustainability and the climate. They are talking about animal agriculture being a killer of the planet, being the biggest contributor to climate change, even though we know that's not reality, that's not based in science or facts or anything accurate. They're just capitalizing on that being something people are talking about, people are concerned about. And there's been several conversations at these activist conferences about taking advantage of those kind of flashpoints of public conversation and public consciousness as a way to further their objective. Just that connection point, it's not a coincidence that when you read media coverage of climate change, a lot of times animal agriculture is referenced. There are groups working very hard to try to make that happen. So that would be one continuing trend, just that conversation that animal agriculture is bad for the animals from their perspective, but they also want to further that narrative that it's bad for the planet. Another big trend that we're continuing to see is pressure campaigns targeting restaurant, retail, and food service brands. So we're going to talk a lot in this conversation about activism on the farm level, but there's also a lot of activism going on targeting our customers, which, again, restaurant, retail, consumer-facing brands, they are getting targeted extremely aggressively by these groups because they've realized if they can get a big household name brand to adopt a certain policy for their supply chain under the guise of animal welfare or sustainability, that's going to have a really big impact on the supply. And I say under the guise of animal welfare because it's really about driving up costs and reducing efficiencies. Again, in their own conversations, at their own conferences, that's what they're coming out and saying, that they want to end animal agriculture. They want to push people to plant-based alternatives. And one way to do that is by raising the cost of animal protein. And they're doing that by making it more difficult to source, more costly to source, by pushing for these policy changes that they'll say, again, are an improvement for animal welfare, but that's not really supported by research or anything of that nature. So we're hearing a lot from restaurant, retail, food service brands that they're getting social media blasted. They're getting petitions circulated against them. They have their logos covered in blood drops and ads and postcards and things like that. So it's not just farmers and ranchers that are dealing with this, but a lot of our restaurant retail customers as well. And then lastly, another trend is targeting of students. And that's all the way from, you know, elementary schools. There's a certain group that's their whole mission is going into schools and doing lesson plans that are about veganism and promoting their agenda. And then also university students. So how to get more university students involved in the activist movement, how to push for vegan policies and pledges on campuses. So trying to target youth as a way to further their agenda.
That's a lot right there just for you guys to monitor on its own.
It's job security, I guess. We always say, you know, we wish we didn't have to exist, but as long as these issues are here, we will be here.
Definitely job security. And like I said, you guys do a great job sending out updates. Otherwise, I would have no idea what was happening in the UK. I see a lot of that consumer-facing stuff in your updates happening over kind of on the other side of the pond, especially. But good to note for people listening that aren't monitoring or kind of involved in the conversation on a daily basis. You mentioned petitions and students. Something I directly wanted to talk today was about a petition happening in California. So the extreme animal rights group Direct Action Everywhere has been working on getting signatures for a factory farm ban on the 2024 ballot in Berkeley. I want to talk kind of what you know about this. What are the implications of it if it did get on the ballot and when? We all know in California, Berkeley isn't an animal ag place. There might be a couple farm animals there, but there's not a lot of actual animal agriculture in the city of Berkeley. Why would they target the city?
It's a great question that, again, people will wonder when they see these pieces of legislation pop up is, well, this isn't actually going to do anything, so why does it matter? And it factors into a bigger strategy by these organizations. So legislation was kind of the precursor to some of the restaurant retail pressure campaigns I mentioned, where activist groups would start at the state level, typically targeting certain states to try to get, again, quote unquote, animal welfare bills passed. These bills, they would typically run them in states that had very little of the production in question so that there wasn't a very organized or coordinated industry in place to push back on what they were claiming. And because it didn't actually make a big impact, there wasn't a lot of push for the industry to invest a lot in negating their claims and trying to defeat the legislation that was proposed. They also really rely on the ballot initiative process. So at the state level, you all in California probably know that better than anyone with things like Prop 12, where those didn't go through the traditional legislative process, which make of it what you will. There's checks and balances. There's a smaller pool of contacts to try to talk to and explain concerns versus having to try to communicate with every citizen who's going to vote, who probably, again, is very disconnected, doesn't have a lot of knowledge about animal agriculture. And when they're reading something that's very oversimplified and to ask them basically, do you care about animal welfare? You know, who's going to say no to that? So that's the intentional strategy, to run these ballot initiatives in states and now in localities where there's not a lot of producers there, because it's going to set a precedent. So now they can point to this list of 12 states or however many counties, however many cities have passed a certain ban, and they're going to use that as a lever of pressure to try to elevate it to take the next step. So for example, one of the first states that passed legislation banning gestation stalls by ballot initiative was Florida. Florida's not a big hog producing state. So again, not a big issue there, but it set the precedent that they're continuing to lean on. And that ultimately culminated in them getting Prop 12 passed in California, which is super impactful because it implies not only to producer applies not only to producers in California, but in products sold in California, which, as you all know, is a big sector of our population in the US and has a big impact. So it's about getting the ball rolling by starting a precedent that then they can use to try to advance their thought process. And that's exactly what's happening here in Berkeley. Are there quote unquote factory farms, and I believe this applies to plants as well, wanting to come to Berkeley? No, I don't really think so. But they're going to be able to point to this as, well, Berkeley passed it, and then they'll go to other cities, and then they're going to go to Sacramento and say, we have this list of however many cities, which represents whatever percentage of California's population who are against this, so you need to take it on at the state level. They've said that they're adopting the model of the fur ban in California, which again, very similarly, went from city to city to city, and then they were able to elevate it to the next step. It wasn't a Direct Action Everywhere conference, but another activist conference a few years ago, a speaker said, you can change the world starting with a local ordinance. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, is starting at the very local level to get that ball rolling and gain momentum to further their ideas at the next step up.
That was a great explanation. Thanks for throwing in the Prop 12 example. I think a lot of this ties through, and you can see it kind of blend with other subjects that you guys monitor, is the amount of intention behind what these groups are doing and this community is doing. It can come off as kind of maybe not intentional if you're not paying closely attention, but there's very close ties to what they're doing and they have long-term strategies. And I think that's definitely something that we're seeing with this local ordinance. So definitely something to continue watching. And thank you for that explanation. Another big thing happening in California is your team is monitoring an upcoming trial in Sonoma County. Three people are on trial at the Superior Court level for allegedly stealing animals from farms a couple years ago. I know there's animal rights events planned around this in Sonoma County, so we'll be watching those during the trial dates of September 8th to 22nd. to make sure they're not planning anything at farms or operations or anything that we need to alert everyone about. But how is your team following this trial and what's the potential outcome of it? Again, I'm sure it's likely to set a precedent, but what is the big deal with this trial?
If you aren't familiar with Direct Action Everywhere, one of the groups that we've referenced a few times, their epicenter is in Berkeley, but they have supporters across the country and they will take the show on the road and have a couple different activists camp out in other states for several weeks to conduct activism. And one of the hallmarks of their activity is what they call, quote unquote, open rescue. And that is the idea of going into farms, usually at night or during a mass protest where they have a bunch of supporters there with them. They enter farms and sometimes plants without permission and they steal animals. They claim it is a rescue. We would call it theft. They don't have permission to be there. They've either used false pretenses to get in or they've just broken in and then they're taking animals. Their claim is that, you know, they're only there to get information. They're there to check on these animals sometimes. But once they get in and they see these grave, horrible conditions, it becomes an emergency and they need to save the animals. They've likened it to seeing a dog in a hot car. That if you see a dog in a hot car, it's an emergency. You can break the window, get that dog out. In California specifically, they've really leaned on a piece of the penal code that deals with animal welfare, 597E, which is that if there's an animal that's been contained for a certain number of time without feed and water, they believe that they have the right to go in and give that animal feed and water. Why they believe that farms are confining animals without feed and water when at the same time they're claiming we're trying to grow these animals so quickly doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the argument that they are making. They have done, again, these type of theft incidents various times across the country, and they are just now, in the past 2 years, starting to face legal consequences for these incidents, and there's been a series of trials. The first was in North Carolina, where DXC's founder had stolen a goat a few years prior. And in that trial, he was found guilty for theft of the animal and stealing the goat. However, in the two trials since, one in Utah dealing with theft of piglets and one in California dealing with theft of chickens, in both of those trials, they have been found not guilty. And they've really been able to make very emotional appeals because you might think, well, how can they be found not guilty when they're filming themselves doing this? They're admitting to doing it. They're not denying any of the basic facts. But again, they're making these very emotional arguments about how it's an emergency. They're rescuing. They don't believe that they're breaking the law. They're just trying to do the right thing. It's the law that's wrong. And they have been able to convince now two juries to see it from their perspective, and they've been acquitted from those charges. So Sonoma County's trial in September is the next trial in, again, this continuing series of trials stemming from these open rescue theft incidents. It's going to be precedent setting, again, either way. It's going to be continuously troubling for us if they are victorious once again, because this is only emboldening them to make their claims. Some of the district attorneys, the prosecutors, and the other cases have said, you know, make no mistake. Now they know it now. They know they're breaking the law, so they can't use this excuse again.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help us retroactively. The Sonoma County verdict, again, is going to be very telling. It is not just one incident. As the producers in that area probably know, they've gone there time and time again. So it's several different incidents. So this is not, you know, an isolated one-off case. It has happened several times. So we're hopeful that the jurors will see the facts and will decide to prosecute or will decide to find them guilty. But unfortunately, we're very concerned because of the way the two more recent trials have gone. If they are found not guilty, they're going to herald it as a victory and that they have the legal right to rescue, and it's only going to embolden them.
Absolutely, which is something we don't need. They're pretty bold already. We'll keep watching that. Thank you guys for watching that as well. Again, those trial dates, it's going to start on September 8th. So as we have more information or details on what does happen or if there's anything planned from the groups as far as activism activity, we will keep everyone posted. And thanks for talking to...
And they do have several things planned. What they've been doing is kind of holding these little convergences around the trials to support the activists on trial. They'll all gather outside wearing certain shirts. They'll try to watch the trial as spectators. And I wouldn't guess they're going to be even bigger since it's right in their backyard in Sonoma County. But they do have a couple different things. Some of it's just putting up posters, things like that. They are planning a vigil at a poultry processing plant that they've targeted several times in the area. So I would definitely say if you are in that Sonoma County area, that you should definitely be on high alert during the time of the trial, because we know they'll be mobilizing and they'll be in the area.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Hannah. We will send out, if you're listening to local producers, if you haven't already gotten an email from us, you should be getting an email, some tips on how to be prepared, what to do if an activist does come onto your property or you have an interaction with one. Go back and listen to our episode that we recorded with Hannah a couple seasons ago, because we talk all about that as well. We'll be watching that starting on September 8th. As far as any other specific trends in California, Hannah, or for cattle producers specifically, is there anything else you guys are seeing that you want to let producers know about?
I would just reemphasize that sustainability conversation, because I think that is so important to the beef and dairy communities, that we are starting to see some universities in cooperation with their campus dining providers make pledges to reduce their offerings of meat, dairy, poultry, eggs, and increase their offerings of plant-based options. So that's kind of a concerning, again, long-range trend that, as to the point that Katie made earlier, that is tied to all of this activism. It is part of this bigger strategy, this longer term strategy. None of this happens in a vacuum. So that's why we have so many of these conversations about sustainability. We also are seeing a lot of activism at the plant level. So even if you aren't necessarily a producer, if you work at a plant, we're seeing a lot of activists using false pretenses to gain entry, to do leave behind recording devices, to try to get access to computers to get information. So if you're at the plant level as well, I would also be very wary and mindful of this type of activism. And just, again, constantly being vigilant, being aware of these potential issues, and letting groups like California Cattle know if you do have a suspicious incident happen. Because a lot of the value of our work comes from crowdsourcing information from our networks so we can piece together trends. So if you do see a drone flying over, if you do have a suspicious phone call, anything like that, definitely let your associations know so we can piece it all together.
Great point, Hannah. Yeah, we do have, thanks to the Ag Alliance, a form that you can help fill out. You can contact me and we can help you get all the details that you might need to report something that was suspicious. But great point on that. You guys kind of do rely on that information, and it contributes to your database as well. I know it can seem a little like frightening and scary that all this that we're talking through, but the good news is we do have the Ag Alliance, and there are lots of people watching these for you and available to help you. If you do have an incident, real quick, Hannah, before we wrap up, what are some of the ways producers can kind of stay engaged in these conversations and protect their operations from extremists just quickly?
Well, we do want to leave you with the message that you're not alone. We have your back. There's a broad community in animal agriculture dealing with this. And of course, the vast majority of consumers confidently want to eat our products, and we just need to reassure them that we're doing the right thing, but they want us to be here. So don't get too caught up in the negativity and in worrying about, again, what's very small but very loud population has to say. You can stay engaged connecting with us. We're at animalagalliance.org. We're also on pretty much all the major social media platforms, and we share blog posts and other information about farm security and activism. So we encourage you to stay in touch there and just take some basic common sense steps to secure your property. Connect with local law enforcement, get their recommendations, know who to call if there's an incident. California has the California Rural Crime Prevention Task Force, which is a fantastic resource, and they've unfortunately had to deal with a lot of these incidents and can be a really great support if you do find yourself targeted. Things like no trespassing signage, fences, gates, locks, locking doors, again, just common sense measures to make yourself a harder target so that if an issue does come up, you've taken steps to protect yourself. And just know that the folks at California Cattle have your back, the Alliance has your back, and the broader animal ag community are all working together on these types of issues. Let's help each other, let's share resources, and let's safeguard the future of animal ag.
Absolutely. And yes, Hannah brought it up twice, but I'm going to bring it up again. It is a very small population, but a loud population. So we are in a good spot. We have each other's backs. And I really appreciate all your time today, Hannah.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And actually, the research just came out today. Gallup updates their poll every few years about the number of self-reported vegans and vegetarians. And that number just came out again. It's at 4% still, which again, that's vegans and vegetarians. That's self-reported. That number has been stable for decades. So 95% plus of the population eats our product, supports us. So let's focus on them.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for bringing that up, Hannah. Thank you guys for listening. Hannah, I'm sure I will see you soon or be in touch with you, hopefully about good news rather than bad news, but either way, look forward to talking to you more in the coming weeks. Everyone listening, if you're not registered for our Cattle Pack event coming up on September 16th, that's only 12 days away. If you're listening the day this podcast comes out, go register, go check out the live auction items, all the way from trips to Hawaii to NFR tickets to hunting trips. Lots of good things, 49er tickets, it's almost football season. So go check it out. There is an option to bid on these items virtually as well. So if you can't attend the event, go check it out at cowcattleman.org/events. Hope to see you there. And yeah, let's have a great showing for Cattle Pack. Until then, thanks again, Hannah, and we'll talk to you soon.